Two play-in games tonight, finishes the field, and then we're ready to go as the NBA playoffs kick off this weekend. And we welcome in our good friend, Omaha resident. We don't know where he's at this morning. Brian Windhorst from ESPN joins us. Where are you today?
I am in Omaha.
Hey.
In half hour, I'll be on First Take. Please tune in.
All right.
Of course we will.
So during your busy season, and your lovely wife is here in Omaha as well, how many days per month do you think you actually physically sleep in Omaha?
It's bad, man. I'm in for the worst summer of Omaha living of my career. Once I leave, which will probably be in about 10 days, I probably won't be back for more than one or two days at a time until mid-August, because this year is a Olympic year, and that's a great opportunity to cover Team USA. It's awesome. I love it, but it's 5 weeks, and it goes playoffs, draft, free agency, right into the Olympics this year. The Olympics actually start in late July, so it'll be, I won't see much of our fine city this year, but there's always next summer.
How's dad life too?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Well, that's the tough part. That's the tough part with the kindergartner. I don't get an opportunity to spend as much time with him this summer, but this is a special Olympic summer, and it being in Paris, it would be a great opportunity. But yeah, there are no home games in Omaha. I did appreciate if the Nuggets and the Wolves go far, that's helpful to me. Like last year, I was able to actually be here in Omaha on the morning of finals games and then fly over. Oh. It's easy to get to Denver, easy to get to Minneapolis. So it helps me when the Nuggets are good as opposed to having to trek out to Boston or the West Coast.
Hey, before we jump into your wheelhouse, this is also another one of your wheelhouse. What did you think of your football team in the spring game last weekend in Columbus?
Well, look, it's been a rough couple of years for my Ohio State Buckeyes. Talking to A.J. Hawk yesterday on the Pat McAfee show, hoping for better days when it comes to Michigan. And I don't care what anybody says. Michigan won fair and square. They beat Ohio State on the field, and they beat really good teams on the field. And when your rival is beating your brains in, you got to reevaluate. And that's what Ohio State's trying to do. And we'll see if it works. But it's been a tough 3 years because, as you know, it doesn't really matter what you do in the rest of the Big Ten. If you're not beating Michigan, you're not going anywhere.
Well, I know that with the NIL game they have going and the amount of very solid players that they have gotten out of the transfer portal, I immediately think of the proud alums who might have helped donate. Are you part of the solution out there, Wendy?
No, not at all.
Oh,
not at all.
Okay.
But you know, I will say this, like, say whatever you want about how good Ohio State players are. Let's see whose names get called next week in the draft. There's going to be a lot more guys from Michigan than guys from Ohio State. So they proved it on the field, and they're going to prove it on when they get drafted, when there's like 10 or 12, defensive players or whatever that get drafted from Michigan next weekend.
Brian Windhorst from ESPN joining us, and as you mentioned, top of the hour, will be on First Take. You covered him from the beginning. You've seen his career, the ups and downs. We're talking about LeBron James. And as they get ready to take on the Lakers in the Western Conference playoffs, should we, and I'm not saying you, but should we talk a little bit more about the man is 39 years old, finished in the top three in three-point percentage, and it seems like as other guys age and they take a step back, he just continues to move right along with a pretty amazing season. What's your thoughts on what he has done this year at 39?
Yeah, he's a bit of a victim of his own success and also where we're at in just the way sports fans have expectations now. It's like if you don't win the championship or get to the championship, it seems to have been a failure season. And I just don't believe that because, kind of like in the Big Ten, there's, 26 teams in the Big Ten now. I mean, every single one of those teams has a different reality. If you're Purdue and you make a bowl game, you've had a really good year.
Yeah.
If you're Ohio State and you lose to Michigan, I don't care what happened in the Cotton Bowl. I really don't. I mean, congrats to Missouri, but I don't care. They lost to Michigan. They didn't make the Big Ten title game. They didn't make the playoffs. People's situations are different. The LA Lakers They won 47 games in the regular season in a very competitive Western Conference. They won the in-season tournament back in December. You can laugh at that, but everybody who was in it at the end wanted to win it. And they won their way in on the road in the play-in game. And if they lose to the Denver Nuggets, who are an awesome team and the defending champion, so be it. You know, LeBron is 15-1 in his career in first-round playoffs here. 15-1. Wow. And if he loses this series over the next 2 weeks, he'll be 15-2. Does that mean that the Lakers are a failure? Some people will say yes. Not in my view. In my view, he had a good season for age 39. He was really proud of himself that he played in 71 games. It was the most games he's played in 7 years. And that he was able to be out there and get, you know, hey, they won 47 games and he played in 71. Like, what wow. if he'd only been able to play in 57 like he did last year? They wouldn't have made the playoffs at all. So that's my viewpoint. People disagree, including some of the people I'll be on TV with in 2 minutes.
Wendy, the other 7-2 with the Sixers and the Knicks, I guess this is a two-part question. I want to know what you thought about Joel Embiid and his overall health in the play-in game, but also what the Knicks are known for from a pace standpoint, if that actually plays into Joel Embiid coming back from that meniscus.
Yeah, well, this is not a 7-2 series. It says it on the scoreboard, right. But it's really a lot more competitive than that, because when Joel Embiid has played this year, the Sixers are 32-8. And that's, you know, that's better than the Celtics winning percentage, who won 64 games. So, he didn't look good the other night. He looked a little bit sluggish. But in the fourth quarter, he made 4 or 5 tremendous plays to bring the Sixers home. And it's kind of a bad break for the Knicks. And there's a reason why there are some teams maybe manipulating things in the last day of the season to avoid having to play the Sixers, because they aren't really a 7 seed. But the Knicks do get home court advantage. And they do get to put pressure on Embiid by using their big men and try to wear them out over the course of the series. The 76ers have been a team that's routinely disappointed in the playoffs. They have never made it past the second round with this group of players. And, like, they're favored by a lot of people to win this series. And you mentioned this, the pace of play. The Knicks are the slowest team in the league, and that favors a guy who's lumbering a little bit like Embiid. So, look, the Sixers, in my view, have a great chance to win this series, but it's absolutely going to be a rugged series. I think he could easily go 7 games.
You trust Milwaukee at all, as inconsistent as they've been?
No. You know, the Bucks are a late-stage competitor. What I mean by that is they've been challenging for championships for about 6 years now. And the way the league operates, organizations are not designed to be able to compete for a title for 6 years. And what's happened is they've traded away all their draft picks. They've invested in older players. They've had to change coaches, flip over the roster, searching, and they're just kind of out of gas. And so here they are. They're not the best team in their conference. Even if they were 100% healthy and playing great, they'd be underdogs against Celtics. And they are dealing with their best player being injured in the playoffs the second straight year. Yeah. That's just bad luck. Yeah. And their second best player, Damian Lillard, is also dealing with a leg injury. And they're playing a team that was 4-1 against them in the regular season in the Pacers. So, no, I don't like their position. I think it's going to be very tough for them. And that one of the biggest questions in the league is how the Bucks play in this playoffs, how they eventually maybe go out, how will it affect what they end up doing in the offseason.
Okay, with the Bucks, how different are they when they made that coaching switch? It wasn't even midseason, it was early season. Is there a lot from that that you say, wow, okay, then that clearly was the right move? And I understand there's been injuries, so maybe it's hard to fully judge that, but, I mean, what's the main difference in your opinion?
The statistics say they're a significantly worse team. That before the coaching change, they were the number 2 offense. After the coaching change, they were like the number 17 offense. Mm-hmm. Before the coaching change, they were the number 19 defense, which is why they made it, because they lost all their defensive edge from the year before when they were number 1 in the league. They've been the 15th best defense. So they've sort of gotten only very mildly better defensively and gotten much worse offensively with the way Doc Rivers has decided to play. They made some decisions about their roster in the offseason. Primarily, they traded defense for offense, and it has not worked out. But I would argue that even if they had done nothing and stayed exactly pat and brought their same team back, they would have been in trouble because the Celtics are just a beast who are in their primes, whereas the Bucks may be a little past it. But you play the games. We've played four playoff games so far in these play-ins, and two star players have already gotten hurt.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler and Zion Williamson, and neither of them are playing tonight. So you play the games. You jump through the hoops. You go around the corners. And that's what the Bucks have to do and hope that it works out for them. But obviously, it doesn't look great right now.
Brian Windhorst from ESPN joining us. Kyrie Irving is healthy. He's happy. He has a lot to prove. What does that mean for Dallas?
Yeah, Dallas has got the best momentum of any team in the Western Conference. They were awesome down the stretch after making the midseason trades, which got them bigger and deeper, which is what you need in the West. Size is a huge factor in these playoff matchups. Kyrie Irving has played like 35 consecutive games without getting injured, without causing any, off-court disruption. And they had a great little break that happened right at the end of the season. Inexplicably, everybody thought the Nuggets were going to be the number one seed. They had a 20-point lead in the game on a Friday night right at the end of the season in San Antonio, and they just went brain dead. Victor Wembanyama got hot, and they dropped that game. And all of a sudden, they're the two, and now the inexperienced, still very good, but inexperienced, Thunder get the number one seed. And here's Dallas playing a wounded Clipper team with Kawhi Leonard out for the last 3 weeks and on the same side of the bracket as the Thunder, not the Nuggets. So not only are the Mavericks playing great, also they were the best defensive team in the league over the last 15 games, which is not what was expected. And that was a product of their trade at the trade deadline, and they get a favorable draw if such one exists in this Western Conference. They are primed to do something special. We'll see if they can carry over their good play.
Wendy, there's regular season studs, and then the playoffs become a different animal. What's your buy-in level on Minnesota?
Yeah, they have a really hard first-round matchup. You know, they play Phoenix, a team that beat them all three times this year and gave their star Anthony Edwards fits defensively. They're not a good defensive team, but Ant only averaged like 15 points a game. So they got to be figuring that out over this last week. They do get Karl Towns back, which is a big boost to them. We'll see how he looks with that coming off that knee surgery. They are an awesome defensive team. They play beautiful defense together. They all work hard. They all do their jobs. They have great length. They're going to have home court advantage. I think they've got a really good chance to win this series, but their big struggle is offense. As good as they are defensively, there are times when they struggle to score, and it appears like the Suns' game plan is to just double-team Anthony Edwards and force other players to beat you. So the ball's going to be in Karl Towns' hands a lot. The ball's going to be in Mike Conley's hands a lot. They're going to need role players to step up and score. I expect that to be an intense series. They had a great step forward season. I love their future, but a tough draw for them coming out of the gate.
Why won't we have a repeat champion for the first time since Golden State? And we're talking about the Nuggets, of course.
Well, we first have to see health. The Nuggets are thinner than they were last year. Their front line is awesome, maybe even playing better than they were. But their bench is thinner. And so if they have an injury or if there's a couple of games where the bench lets them down, they're a little bit more susceptible. And also the Boston Celtics are awesome. They are a perfect modern team. They have versatility. They have defense. They play offense. Everybody who steps on the floor can shoot the three. They can play much bigger this year because they traded for Porzingis. And they are, without question, a dominant team that was 0-2 against the Nuggets in the regular season. So, and in this case, the Nuggets, in a Nuggets-Celtics series, the Nuggets would not have home court. Last year, they used their home court as a weapon up in Denver. They wouldn't get that in the finals this year. So if indeed it's Celtics-Nuggets, I think that would potentially be a great series with the Celtics getting the home court advantage.
Hey, fantastic. We always appreciate your time. Anytime you can give us, and we'll be watching you top of the hour. And have a great next couple of months, Wendy.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
That's Brian Windhorst, of course, lives here in Omaha. Wife is from Omaha.
Yeah. So she's a West Side grad.
Man, how about that? Yeah. Do a show in the morning. Like,
they all are.
So we're going to be able to tell. He's got that weird backdrop. Yeah, it looks like a Catholic school gymnasium.
Yeah, he looks like he's at a, you could get grammar. I always like to say grammar school gym.
So we'll be on get up here in about 10 minutes, and it'll be at his house.
Yep.
All right.
So cool.
We got him first.
Yeah. Look at how he's spending mornings, though, and then just flying. What a life.
Yeah.
He's at that status now. I mean, I don't envy it for him because he's got a young son at home now, and I know that's occupied a lot of his time. But yeah, you forget we're in an Olympic year too, where you get to go to Paris and cover the Olympic Games. So I'm sure that that's trying. But hey, that's the labor of love, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Gets paid, I'm sure, handsomely for that too. But
I first met him, you know, because he was LeBron's reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think
you're out there?
Yeah, so Miami covering the Heat was pretty cool because even at the height of D Wade and Bosh and LeBron, they would take care of the local media.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the locker rooms are open and LeBron would hang out.
Yeah.
I mean, back then he was still kind of early in his career.
Yeah. He was having fun.
Yeah, Wendy would there all the time. I wonder if ESPN, and it's not necessarily Holly Rowe, because you know, she did it at the end of the Iowa season. Like if ESPN or a news outlet will hire a reporter specifically for Caitlin Clark. You know, because Holly Rowe was specific for Caitlin Clark.
Yep.
And but Holly Rowe is, and by the way, she deserves a lot of credit for elevating mm-hmm. the passion for women's basketball in this country.
She's as good as there is.
But I wonder, and you know, and she bounces around on the WNBA broadcast. Right. I wonder if ESPN will pull a LeBron. You know, like they had Wendy,
mm-hmm.
and then it changed when he moved back to Cleveland.
Yeah.
If ESPN has a specific reporter all the time for Caitlin.
Yeah, Clark. That's a great question. And I think if there's one player, and I guess better yet, if there is a time to do that in that sport with a certain player, now's the time. I can't think of a better time where it's on the top of everyone's mind. And even with some of the last 24 hours for Caitlin Clark between Creepy Greg Doyle and
ESPN could hire him
and Antonio Brown.
There's a reality show.
Probably don't want to do that. And then what Antonio Brown decided to do yesterday too. He's such a clown that you know she's being talked about with not only her unbelievable talent, but also the things that she's dodging here left and right that comes with that fame. I think it would be it would behoove any outlet, whether it's ESPN or anybody, to have that constant coverage or have that constant. Reporters talk about elevating the game. You're getting sort of a day in, day out look of how she's preparing for games, how she's recovering from games. I think it'd be fantastic.
The games don't matter to me in the WNBA. The games don't matter. Not the result, not breaking down mm-hmm. the X's and O's.
Yeah.
It's all of the surrounding stuff that will be about the WNBA this summer. Hate to break it to people and you're going to be disappointed because you want a full wrap of Minnesota, Indiana. It's all about the other stuff, the rivalries, the money, the shoe deals, the mm-hmm. crowds, the attention, all of that kind of stuff. It's not about the individual game in the end of May that could decide who's going to get the four seed in the Eastern Conference.
Right. It's completely different.
All right, Mike Schaefer, Matt Verzal in the last hour in 1620 The Zone.